Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Max Tegmark. Max is a professor of physics and cosmology at MIT and the author of the book Life 3.0, Being Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence. He's also the co-founder of the Future of Life Institute, a nonprofit focused on mitigating existential threats facing humanity, particularly those from advanced artificial intelligence. In this interview, Max asserts that the most important conversation in the world is the one about humanity's future with artificial intelligence. Technology is a neutral force, and it's our responsibility to manage it wisely and steer it towards a beneficial future, he argues. As our technology becomes more powerful, so too do the positive and negative consequences. Max notes that we need to decide what type of future we want to have with AI so that its impact on society is beneficial rather than harmful. We also discuss how governments, academia, and companies can help create a better future with AI, the comparisons between prior science advancements and today's intelligence advancements, how Max became interested in AI in the first place, and a variety of other topics.
Max Tegmark, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, excellent. Max, I thought we would begin with your book, Life 3.0. Congratulations. It's quite an interesting read, to say the least. Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence is the tagline to that. And I wondered if you could take a moment and describe, Life 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0, as well as where on that continuum you believe us to be now.
Sure. I call the earliest life 1.0 because it was really dumb, like bacteria, unable to learn anything during its lifetime. I call us humans life 2.0 because we can learn, right? Which me and nerdy geek speak, I think of as installing new software into our brains, like languages and job skills. And in fact, it's the ability that we humans have to design our own software in the sense that made us the dominant species on this planet, right? If you feel that there's something more you would like to know, then you go and acquire that knowledge. Life 3.0, which can design not only its software, but also its hardware, obviously doesn't exist yet, but it probably would be fair to count ourselves as 2.1 already with our artificial knees, pacemakers, and cochlear implants. So I think it's really interesting to look closely at our relationship with technology and think about where this is all going.
Very interesting. And I'd love to also understand, Max, where your own interest in the topic of artificial intelligence began. You were a physicist at MIT, and I wonder, through the course of your academic training, your professional career, when was it that the topic of artificial intelligence first captured your imagination?
I think it all began with me just being really curious as a kid. I remember lying in my hammock, you know, between two apple trees as a teenager and thinking that the two greatest mysteries out there of all were our universe out there, which I spent 25 years of my career studying, and then our universe in here, in our head, you know, our minds, the science of intelligence. And in recent years, I've just gotten ever more fascinated by the second one, to the point that I've shifted my day job, make my MIT research group, you know, work on AI research. Really, really interesting. And in parallel with his day job, though, I've also, on nights and weekends, been thinking a lot about how we can make sure that all the growing impact of AI on society is going to be good, not bad.
Exactly. That's very interesting. And I look forward to getting into that topic a little bit more. You know, one of the things that I found intriguing, as you've described, trying to determine where artificial intelligence might take us, you use what might be sort of a driving analogy of sorts. First, you need power, an engine of some sort, in order to make artificial intelligence work. You need steering. You need to steer it in one direction or another. And then also there needs to be a destination. And I wonder if you can sort of, again, peel back the onion on each of those topics and give us a sense for your meaning in each case, as well as sort of your hypothesis of where we are heading.
Yeah, I really like this metaphor, actually, which I owe a lot to my friend Jan Tallinn for, who, because if you're building a rocket or building a car, right, it would be totally nuts to just focus on making the engine powerful and not figure out how to steer it. It would also mean that even if you have the steering sorted, to like launch the rocket without figuring out first where you're actually trying to go with it. But yet, I think this is, unfortunately, to a large extent, what we're doing as a species as we now build ever more powerful technology, and in particular AI. So to be really ambitious, which I think we should be, we really need to think about all three, the power, the steering, and the destination. And this is why, on top of my day job then, which has a lot to do with the power and a little bit with the steering, I also co-founded the Future of Life Institute with Jan Tallinn and a bunch of other colleagues, where we talk a lot about this business of the destination. You know, we're making AI more powerful, but what kind of society are we hoping to create with this? If we succeed in the original goal of AI research, which is to make so-called artificial general intelligence that can do all jobs better than humans, then what do we want it to mean to be human in this? In this future, you know, I'm pretty convinced that if we do succeed, it's either going to be the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. And which of the two it's going to be is going to come down to how much planning we do now. You know, to, if we have no clue about where we want to go, we're probably not going to end up where we want to go. But if we think it through carefully and steer towards that direction, then we can create a truly inspiring future, helping humanity really flourish like never before. And the reason I say that is because, first of all, the reason that today is better than the Stone Age, of course, is because of technology. That's why the life expectancy is no longer 32 years. You know? And everything I love about civilization is the product of intelligence. So that means that if we can amplify our intelligence with artificial intelligence, we have the potential to use it to solve today's and tomorrow's toughest problems. Cure the diseases that we now are told are incurable because we haven't been smart enough to solve them, you know, lift everybody out of poverty, solve the climate, and do all sorts of incredibly inspiring things that we haven't even thought of yet. There's an enormous upside if we get this right. And that's why I'm so motivated to work on that.
That's so interesting. I'm struck, Max, by the caveman analogy. I think in some ways it's appropriate. We are so far removed from cavemen, cavewomen, that the evolution from their experience to ours, you know, one wouldn't recognize the two, from life expectancy to ability to communicate to the time we have to reflect and the time we have to sort of choose our own destiny in some ways. And actually, what
that's
I find
so true. But if I can interrupt you just a little bit, please. There, you said something super interesting. Because in another way, though, we actually are stuck, Peter, with the caveman mindset. Because when we were cavemen, right, and the most powerful technology we had were rocks and sticks, then it wasn't possible to do all that much damage with our technology. There were always some cavemen, and there are always people today also who, for whatever weird reason, want to harm as many people as they can. But you couldn't do that much harm with a rock and a stick until you got overpowered. With nuclear weapons, you can do a lot more harm. And the more powerful our tech gets, the more power we have to mess up. But we also get, at the same time, you know, more power to do good things. So the one lesson here is, you know, first of all, the more powerful the technology is, the more important the steering becomes. And second, this is a reminder that technology isn't good or evil. When people ask me if I'm for AI or against AI, I usually ask them if they're for fire or against fire. Yeah, you can obviously use it to keep your house warm in the winter, or you can use it for arson. And because of that, we've put a lot of effort now into steering. We not only have fire extinguishers and fire departments, but we also have ways of punishing people that do things with fire that we don't appreciate. But the thing is, and this is something where we have to snap out of our caveman mindset, that in the, you know, the way to get a good future with tech is always to win this wisdom race, and always make sure that as technology grows more powerful, the wisdom with which you manage it keeps pace with it. I think with fire, we've by and large succeeded, and similarly with cars, you know, when we invented them and screwed up a whole bunch of times. But by now, we've invented the seatbelt and the airbag and the traffic lights and laws against going too fast, and things are pretty good. We always, you know, kept ahead in this wisdom race by learning from mistakes ever since we were cavemen and messed up with fire for the first time. But now, you know, technology is getting so powerful that we're soon going to have technology that's so powerful that we don't want to learn from mistakes anymore, because one mistake might be one mistake too many. Mm-hmm. So we need to rethink. We don't want to have an accidental nuclear war with Russia tonight and be like, oopsie, learn from this mistake and be a little more careful next time. Much better to be proactive rather than reactive, right, and plan ahead. And that's exactly the strategy I think we need to take before we ever build artificial general intelligence that can do everything we can do as well, because we want to get it right first time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I appreciate that. That's a great way to formulate that, Max. I one of the things I'm interested in is, as you think about the evolution from caveman, and as you say, there are some things we still share with our ancestors from long ago. The power for AI to make change, even if you believe, if one believes that AGI, artificial general intelligence, isn't truly going to be here for decades, even if it's just decades and not centuries from now, the change that it will bring about will be almost the equivalent of, it would strike me, as going from cavemen to today. For example, it has the potential power to change the way in which we work. You've written quite persuasively about the possibility of, you know, many aspects of what we do being taken over by artificial intelligence. And in a society where many of us are defined, and hopefully defined positively, by the work that we do, it's actually quite unsettling to think about, wow, the things I love in my day job today will be done better by some artificial intelligence. How do I redefine myself in that way? I wonder what perspectives you'd lend to that.
Yeah, really great questions. And you hit on two separate things. So let me say, give two responses. First, you said, isn't it fair to say that getting from today to artificial general intelligence is almost as big a jump as from being caveman to today? I would say, actually, going from today to AGI is a bigger jump from caveman until today. Mm-hmm. When we were cavemen, we were the smartest species on the planet. Today, we still are.
It's a fair point.
We build artificial general intelligence, we're not. And that's a huge, huge game changer. Moreover, okay, going from cavemen to today, we doubled our life expectancy. We can have cell phones and do all sorts of other cool stuff. We're still stuck on this little planet and still die typically after a century. If we can build artificial general intelligence, really, not even the sky is the limit, right? There's the reason we keep thinking it has to take so many thousands of years to figure out how to live 200 years or 1,000 years or move to another solar system is because we're stuck in this caveman mindset that we have to invent all this technology ourselves. That's not true, because if we can build artificial general intelligence, it's by definition able to do all jobs better than us, including jobs involving making better AI and inventing technology. That's why it's often said that this could be the last invention that we need to make. So we might end up in the future where life is flourishing, not just for the next election cycle, but for billions of years, not just on Earth, but throughout much of this amazing cosmos. And it will all have started perhaps here on Earth with us solving intelligence and then using it, you know, to do all these awesome things. So the upside, I would say, if we get it right, is much bigger than the upside of going from being cavemen to being where we are now. And then for the other part of your question, what do we want it to mean to be humans if all jobs can be done better than machines? I think it's really profound also. But, you know, that's why the subtitle of my book is Being Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence, because you're right. You know, jobs don't just give us income. They also give us meaning and purpose in our lives. So if we can produce everything we need with machines and figure out a way of sharing this wealth so everyone gets better off, this is another controversial topic, we still have to also solve this question of how we will now find meaning and purpose and find challenges in our lives, so on. And this is a question which is so challenging that we can't just leave it to a bunch of tech nerds like myself. It's not like AI programmers are some sort of world experts on what makes humans happy, right? And we really need to broaden this conversation to get everyone in on it and discuss, you know, what kind of future are we hoping to create? And I think we're doing it all wrong, frankly. I often get students walking into my office at MIT asking for career advice about their future. And I always start by asking them where they want to be in the future, where they see themselves. And if all she can say to me is that maybe she'll have cancer, you know, maybe she'll be murdered, or maybe she'll be run over by a truck, you know, terrible strategy for career planning, right? what I want her to do is to come in with fire in her eyes and say, this is where I want to be. And then we can figure out what the challenges are and come up with a good strategy to avoid them and the problems and get where she wants. That's what we should do as a species also. But we're not. You know, every time we go to the movies and see something about the future, it's just one dystopia after another, right? And it just makes us paranoid people. And it also divides us, like fear always does, right? I think it's so crucial for us to really have a conversation about what kind of future are we really excited about. And I'm not just talking about some minor, boring little things like, oh, get 10% richer, cure this little disease. No, think big. If machines can do everything with technology, then what kind of future would be really on fire about? What kind of society would you like to live in? What would you like your typical day to be like? And if we can articulate a really shared positive vision that really catches on around the world, that we can collaborate towards getting towards with AI, then, you know, I think we have a much greater chance of actually getting there.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought at all about, I'm sure you've thought, do you care to share some of your own personal answers for that? You are a professor, you run an institution, as you mentioned, the Future of Life Institute. You know, what happens when those things become irrelevant? If in fact AGI were to get to the point where the work that you were doing is no longer meaningful to the folks that you were working with, to the folks that you were teaching, you know, what then? If you don't mind my putting it directly to you.
Yeah, it is a really hard-hitting question, I have to admit. You know, I get so much joy, for example, out of figuring stuff out. And if I could just press a button and the computer would write my papers for me, would it really be as much fun? Or you're a journalist, right? If you could just press a button and then your computer would do the interview and then...
Exactly, yeah.
Would you enjoy your job as much?
That's right, two computers just simply speaking to each other about the book that one of the computers wrote.
Yeah, what's in it for us, really? And even if we could somehow persuade someone to pay us anyway, right?
Right.
I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to give you any really glib answers to this, but really throw it out as a challenge to anyone who reads or listens to this to think about it themselves, because it's really not easy. That's why in the book you mentioned, I actually have 12 different futures that people can choose between and see which ones they hate the most, which ones they find some sympathetic things about, and really, really get people thinking. I don't think we should let perfect be the enemy of good here. And just because we can't think about a future that we're totally convinced is perfect, we should do nothing. We should at least think about it enough so that we can just sort of start steering in roughly the right direction. And I think we already know enough that there's some pretty obvious choices we need to make now that we haven't yet. So one of them is this business that we touched upon with income inequality. And if we can dramatically grow the overall world GDP or WDP, what do you call it, world? Anyway, the total economic output of the world can grow enormously. And we still can't figure out a way of sharing this economic pie so everyone gets better off. Well, then shame on us, I think. And if we just keep our eyes closed and don't act, the opposite is obviously going to happen, because as more and more human jobs get replaced by machines, now that income that used to be paid in salaries instead goes to whoever owns the machines, right? And we can already see that on the stock market. You know, why is Facebook worth 12 times as much as Ford, even though it has only 8 times fewer employees, if I'm remembering correctly? It's because Facebook is the more high-tech company. And as all companies become more like that, then if we don't make any tweaks to the system, we're going to get way more dramatic income inequality and way more people left behind than now. On the other hand, with all that wealth, it's pretty easy to fix. You just need to bring in enough tax revenue that you can use it to make everybody better off. So that's one no-brainer, I think. And if we don't solve that one, we're just going to get more and more really bitter and angry people, which will, I think, make democracy more and more unworkable with all the polarization. A second thing, which I think is a no-brainer, is that we want to make sure that we avoid a really damaging arms race in lethal autonomous weapons. Today, we're in this really good situation that almost all the research in AI is going into helping people in various ways. And most AI researchers really want to keep it that way. You know, biology say, a similar fork in the road around the time when I was born, when we were on the cusp of a horrible arms race and bioweapons. There, biologists around the world pushed really hard to get an international ban on bioweapons. And because of that, now if you go ask 100 random people on the street what they think about biology, they're all going to basically smile and associate it with new cures, not with bioweapons. When was the last time you read about a bioweapon terrorist attack in the newspaper? Right? Probably can't even really remember. And that's how we want it to be with AI in the future too. But there, you know, we'll see how it goes, because the negotiations at the UN right now about banning certain really horrible AI weapons that can go used by terrorists to murder people anonymously and so on, or sort of touch and go whether they're going to be adopted or not. And then the third thing, which I think we need to do right now also, is to really focus more resources on the steering, because almost all the funding that's going into AI is going into making it more powerful. Very little is going into AI safety research of various sorts. And that means if we just increase it a little bit, it's going to help so much more. You know, as we put AI in charge of ever more decisions and infrastructure, we really need to transform these buggy and hackable computers into robust AI systems that you can really trust, right? Because otherwise, all this awesome new technology can malfunction and harm us, or even get hacked and be turned against us. And as AI gets more and more capable, we also have to work on what we in nerdy geek speak call the value alignment problem for AI. Because, you know, the real threat, if we get artificial general intelligence, is not that it's going to turn evil, like in silly Hollywood movies, but simply that it turns really competent and accomplishes goals that aren't aligned with our goals, either because it's controlled by someone who doesn't share our goals, or because the machine itself just has power over us and does things we don't want. And so to solve that, there's some really tough technical challenges we have to solve. We have to figure out how to make machines understand our goals, adopt our goals, and then teach these goals if they get smarter. And these problems are also hard, even though work has begun on them. You know, it might take 30 years to solve them. So we should really focus on them now so we have the answers by the time we need them.
What
we can't just start working on them as an afterthought right before someone switches on an AGI.
Yes, very interesting. What role do private institutions, academic institutions, governmental institutions, what role do each play? Obviously, each are exerting influence in their own ways and progressing at different rates, I suppose, from their different vantage points and their ability to potentially impact this. And I'm curious how you see that balance.
I think academia is great for developing solutions to these AI safety problems and just making them publicly available so all companies everywhere in the world can use them. You don't want someone to own the IP on some safety solution, because that will just cause more bad things to happen, right? You want it to be free. Private companies, I think, have by and large played a very constructive role here in helping encourage sort of AI safety work. For example, most of the big players in AI have joined together in the partnership of AI, Google, IBM, Microsoft, Facebook, and so on, including also many international companies, where they encourage precisely development of this sort of wisdom. Governments absolutely need to step it up, though, and provide more funding for this kind of safety research than they are today. No government would fund the nuclear reactor research without also funding reactor safety research. And similarly, no country should fund computer science research while also putting a decent slice, at least, for the safety part, the steering part. So that's my wish list for what we should focus on right now to maximize the chances of things going well. And then in parallel, you know, everybody else who's not an AI researcher and not in charge of government funding should ask themselves what sort of future they would really like to see. And they should remember that next time they vote. They should remember that whenever they exert influence in other ways, because this is everybody's future. And we want it to be a future for everybody.
How do you, Max, remain current on the various topics of relevance to this? I mean, artificial intelligence draws from so many different disciplines and brings together from the various parts of the landscape that we just described. Obviously, benefit surely from your affiliation with MIT and the many great minds that are there, obviously present company included, but the many collaborators you have to no doubt both educate and be educated by. But I'd be curious how you remain abreast of progress or lack thereof as this advances.
Both by, as you say, there, you know, the research is happening right around me where I work, and the nerdy AI conferences I go to. But also, it's been really fascinating doing this nonprofit work, getting to spend so much time talking with top researchers and CEOs and so on from the companies that are making such incredible progress on this, and hear what their thoughts are on this. And, you know, I'm encouraged. I find that the leaders in industry here are by and large really a quite idealistic bunch who really are not just doing this to make money, but very much also because they want to see this technology as an opportunity for really creating a better future. And just need to make sure that society at large shares this goal, right? So this all this idealism gets channeled into good things and not just gets used to hack elections and create new ways of murdering people anonymously or whatnot. That would be a really sad perversion of all these good intentions.
Well, Max Tegmark, thank you so much for taking time with me today. It's been fascinating to understand a bit more about some of the ideas expressed in your great book, Life 3.0, some of the research that you're doing. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.